News of the Times. Frightful Fridays. The attempted ravishing of Miss Dickinson. Welcome to News of the Times. In today's episode, our setting is on the train. This case from 1875 was considered so shocking in its day, Queen Victoria herself became involved. A young lady of 22 has been invited by her sister to stay with them. She books a first-class passage on the train and is joined in her journey by a much older colonel with a staff placement at a barracks headquarters. It all starts amicably and then slowly takes on a more sinister tone. When the case goes to trial, whole streets become blocked by hordes of people attempting to attend. Queen Victoria herself stepped in personally, and because of the case, trains themselves were changed forever. We take a look at this sensational case from 1875 involving the Colonel, Miss Dickinson, the train, and the attempted ravishing in today's episode of Frightful Fridays. We hope you enjoy the show. Background. In 1875, trains were made up of long strings of individual carriages, which one entered through each individual carriage door. There was no long corridor within the train allowing a porter to go through. The compartments were independent of each other. The only way to get into one's carriage was through the outside door into it. Trains at the time were also supposed to have an emergency cord that could be pulled to alert staff that there was something wrong. However, scandalously, some trains did not have them, or they were broken. This meant that a person in trouble was utterly isolated. Miss Rebecca Kate Dickinson is a young lady of 22 years of age, residing with her two unmarried sisters at Durnford, near Midhurst in Sussex. Another sister, married to Dr. Bagshaw, resides at St. Leonard's. On June 16th, Miss Dickinson receives a telegram from her married sister inviting her to accompany them on a short trip to Switzerland. Delighted, Kate packs her things together and takes the next train out on the following day. She books a first-class ticket and initially has a carriage to herself. Trains at this time supposedly had an emergency contact system, but they were notoriously often broken or missing. At the next station, Colonel Valentine Baker boards and takes the seat opposite Miss Dickinson. Colonel Baker from the Queen's Army is a staff member at Aldershot, a major garrison in south-east England. Colonel Baker is some 50 years of age and married. What ensues is a rape attempt within the carriage that horrified and appalled Victorian England. The ravishing or attempted violation or outrage, many rape attempts were referred to at the time, was all the more shocking as it occurred with personages of the higher social class. The fact that the event was not hidden, but rather during the day on a train, made the attempt all the more shocking. Miss Dickinson, with backing from her family, pursues the charge against Colonel Baker, an incredibly brave move. Some would say that she was forever ruined, although the rape attempt was unsuccessful. Making her accusation public could potentially destroy her chances of a good marriage forever. It was also brave to publicly accuse someone of Colonel Baker's standing. In Victorian times, high-ranking military figures socialized with aristocracy. Accusing someone of his social standing could very well lead to accusations of her making it up, resulting in her being forever removed from polite society. From the Bolton Evening News, the 19th of June, 1875, Kissing a Lady in a Railway Carriage. Colonel Valentine Baker of the 10th Hussars was brought before Colonel Ross in Guildford, charged with committing assault upon a young lady named Kate Dickinson of Durnford, Midhurst in Sussex, in a railway carriage on the South Western Railway on Thursday. Miss Dickinson stated that she had entered the train at Midhurst and the defendant got in at Liphook Station, and after some conversation on general subjects, the defendant got up, closed the window, and remarked that the train would not stop again until it reached Esher. He then kissed her forcibly, and her rising to pull the cord to warn the guard, the defendant forced her into the seat and again kissed her against her will. He afterwards attempted to take further liberties with her when she struggled to the window, got hold of the handle, and attempted to escape from the carriage, the defendant endeavouring to restrain her. She placed one foot on the lower step of the train, and in this position she rode 5 miles till the train stopped at Esher, when she was released by the guard and others. The defendant was arrested. No other evidence was offered, and the defendant was remanded. The case is a sensation and makes all the national headlines. Colonel Baker attempts to get it go away with an apology and an offer of financial remuneration for her distress. His offer is rejected by Miss Dickinson, and with her family's backing, she pursues charges against Colonel Baker. Colonel Baker, with his considerable financial backing, as well as the support of the Queen's Army, who are keen to avoid scandal, is able to obtain expensive legal representation. Miss Dickinson is represented by the prosecution team. Colonel Baker's defence team try a number of different proposals to forego a public court case. They placed an appeal twice to have the trial delayed. Both requests are rejected. They request to have a special court jury rather than the usual trial jury. This is also rejected. The case goes to the grand jury to see if there is enough evidence to warrant a trial by jury. From the Sunderland Daily Echo and Shipping Gazette, 30th of July, 1875, the case of Colonel Valentine Baker. This was a case which had caused, from the position of the accused, a good deal of interest in the public mind. The indictment against Colonel Baker consisted 3 counts. The first was that he attempted to ravish Miss Dickinson. The second, that he did indecently assault her. And the third was for a common assault. The most serious count in this indictment was the first, and in order to find a true bill on this count, the jury must be of the opinion that the accused has made up his mind to proceed to the last extremities and in spite of any resistance. If, however, from circumstances which would be laid before them, they did not believe the accused had it in his mind to commit so grave a crime, they would not find a true bill on this count. With the count for indecent assault, they would have little trouble. The deposition of the young lady was to the effect that Colonel Baker kissed her on the mouth and took further liberties. The law was that if any kissed a woman against her will and to gratify any passion of his, that was indecent assault. There was, of course, kisses which were not indecent, and to constitute a kiss of an indecent act, it must be given against the recipient's will and to gratify a passion. The other act which had been deposed to was clearly indecent assault. The jury would take all the circumstances into their consideration and find accordingly. Colonel Baker appeared in Croydon Court this morning. Sergeant Ballantyne's application to postpone the trial had been refused. The trial will commence next Monday. The bail has been doubled. The trial is all that London is talking about. The defence team is trying to slow the heaps of condemnation being laid at Colonel Baker's door. Attempts to explain away the kiss as a gesture of friendship, that it had no sexual nature attached to it. The judge responds in fury at the start of the trial. From the Penny Illustrated Paper, the 7th of August, 1875. The Trial of Colonel Baker. We are glad to say, for the credit of the administration of law in England, that the second attempt to postpone the trial of Colonel Baker met with the same fate as the first. The application met with a firm negative answer from Mr. Justice Brett. It was on Thursday, July 29th, that the Croydon Assizes were opened, and the charge against Colonel Baker of indecently assaulting Miss Dickinson in a railway carriage of the South Western Railway was naturally the chief theme of the judge's opening address to the grand jury. His calm and lucid exposition of the law was brought to conclusion by few admirable and timely remarks, which we proceed to quote for the benefit of those who may perchance be led into auscultory excesses by the recent defence in the City Temple on the part of Mr. Beecher's counsel of kissing as a duty pastors owe to their flock. Mr. Justice Brett on kissing. The learned judge, after analysing the preliminary charges against Colonel Baker, went on to say, "But I go further and say this, that even though the latter part was not true, yet if a man kisses a young woman, or woman against her will, with any criminal passion, or with an intent to gratify any passion of his own, or with any intent to excite a passion in her, I am of the opinion that such kissing is in itself an indecent assault if done against the woman's consent. There are, as you know, some kisses which no one would say were indecent. The kiss of a father to his daughter is a holy kiss. The kiss of a riotous and playful assembly of young people has nothing of indecency in it, although if it were done against a personal consent, it might be an assault. But a kiss which is to gratify passion or intended to excite passion, to my mind, is indecent, and therefore, if that stood alone, and you thought that was the nature of the act, I should say you ought to find a bill for indecent assault. If you find a bill for indecent assault, it is obvious that you must also find a bill for common assault. For even the mere laying of a hand on her against her consent with an evil intention would be an assault." With the trial being the event of the season, the crowds of people actually create such a furore that traffic is stopped in several directions surrounding the building for hours. From the Penny Illustrated Paper, the 7th of August, 1875, The Trial of Colonel Baker. The trial did not commence on Monday morning till 10:30, but the doors were besieged for at least an hour and a half previously by a surging multitude, amongst whom are many well-dressed women who stood the pressure with an endurance and a persistency which proved that they must have been not only strong-minded, but tolerably stout in heart and body. Two adventurous ladies, taking advantage of the police being wholly occupied in protecting the doors, were lifted up to one of the windows, the sills of which is about 7 feet from the ground, and were then pulled in by friends above, amidst the jeers and shouts of the mob. This irregular mode of ingress was then secured by the police, but many were afterwards admitted through the cells and the prisoner's dock. The scene outside, however, continued to present a most excited aspect, the street being so densely crowded as frequently to prevent vehicle traffic. Mr. Justice Brett took his seat punctually at 10:30, at which time every available place, whether of sitting or standing room, was filled, and amongst the earliest arrivals on the bench was the Earl of Lucan, a number of military officers from Aldershot, and magistrates of the county. There was a crowded attendance of the bar, and considerable amusement was created by the learned counsel engaged in the case of being obliged to get into their places by passing through the dock. Mr. Sergeant Robinson watched the case on behalf of the London and South Western Railway. When the learned judge had taken his place, Colonel Baker was at once placed in the dock. Mr. Sergeant Parry's outline of the case. Mr. Sergeant Parry, in opening for the prosecution, said, "Gentlemen of the jury, it would be idle for me to suppose that you have not heard of this case before, and it may well be that some of you have discussed the merits of it. But I invite you, and I am sure you will do so, to drive from your minds any prejudgment you have formed, and to give your verdict according to the evidence you may hear in court today. The case has excited a great deal of attention, but I believe that when 12 gentlemen are summoned in the jury box, they invariably decide according to the evidence and the direction of the learned judge. I regret the position in which the defendant now stands. He is a colonel in the Queen's Army, holds a staff appointment at Aldershot, is a married man, and is about 50 years of age. He stands before you now charged with a cowardly, unmanly attack upon a young lady whom he met for the first time in a railway train on June the 17th. There are 3 counts to the indictment, the first of which charges him with assaulting Miss Dickinson with intent to ravish. The second is a charge of indecent assault, and the third charges him with common assault. Miss Dickinson has a brother-in-law, a Dr. Bagshaw, who, with his wife, resides at St. Leonard's, and on June the 16th, that is, the day before this attack was made upon her, she received a telegram from her sister inviting her to accompany them on a short trip to Switzerland. Accordingly, in a hurried manner, she started from Petersfield Station and took her seat in a first-class compartment alone. She had some luggage and a portmanteau labelled Dr. Bagshaw, Dover. The next station was Liphook, and there the defendant, Colonel Baker, entered the carriage. Miss Dickinson sat with her face to the engine on the left side of the train, with the window open. When Colonel Baker got in, he sat upon the opposite side of the carriage in the middle of the seat. He commenced a polite conversation with her by asking her whether she would like the window raised. She declined and said she rather liked it the way it was. From Liphook the train went on to Woking, and from Woking it would run on to Clapham or Vauxhall, a distance of 20 miles. Baker only entered into general conversation on the most innocent topics, such as theatres, the academy, the pictures, and so on. In fact, on such topics as a gentleman might address a lady about. Nothing of consequence took place until after the train left Woking, when it would have to run 20 miles. Just after that, Colonel Baker's manner entirely changed, and he began asking her insulting questions. Miss Dickinson scarcely answered him and replied, in every possible way. The types of questions he asks, which are deemed insulting by a Victorian lady, include questions of whether she believes in mesmerism, hypnotism, and how a mesmerist could make a woman do anything he wanted. Colonel Baker goes on to say how he believes Miss Dickinson would be a good candidate for mesmerism. He then begins to insist on knowing her name, where she is staying, and requesting to exchange personal details such as address. Miss Dickinson refuses to give her name or address. From the Penny Illustrated Paper, the 7th of August, 1875. The Trial of Colonel Baker. After the train left Woking, Colonel Baker suddenly stood up, raised the window of the carriage, and continued his insulting conversation. He put his arm around her waist, and he kissed her forcibly and against her will. She begged and entreated him to leave her alone. She got up for a moment and went to the communicator, and it is very much to be regretted that there was no communicator. He said, "Don't ring," and then seized her forcibly around the waist and pressed her back into the seat with his whole weight. He kissed her repeatedly on the lips and tried to raise her clothes. There could be no doubt what he was attempting. At this moment, by a supreme effort, the young lady disentangled herself from Colonel Baker and tried to break the window, but failed. She managed, however, to get it down, and thrusting her body out as far as possible, screamed loudly and attracted the attention of several of the passengers. She also managed to open the door and get one foot out upon the steps and the other one upon the footboard, and in that position she continued from Waltham to Esher, in a state of the greatest alarm and peril, and it seems a providential thing that she did not lose her life. That was a distance of 4 or 5 miles, and the defendant, no doubt, by that time got alarmed. This young lady imperiled her life rather than submit to dishonour, and as she stated before the magistrate, had made up her mind that she would rather die than re-enter the carriage. The defendant must have felt alarm. He had hold of her right hand all the time and entreated her to come back, but she said she would rather sacrifice her life. Just before they reached Esher, the driver saw her and stopped his train and took her down and asked what was amiss. She replied, "He has insulted me. He will not let me alone." These, gentlemen, are the material facts, the outline of which will be filled up by the evidence of Miss Dickinson and several other important witnesses. The fact that Miss Dickinson would rather hang out of a moving train for some 5 miles, thus imperiling her life rather than take a chance on being raped, is in itself a testimony to Colonel Baker's guilt. At the station, Miss Dickinson's clear distress is noted. She is placed back in her carriage, but with a reverend on the train as her protector. Colonel Baker is removed to another carriage with two other large and formidable passengers. At her final destination, she is collected by her brother, to whom she relays all the facts of the event. He confirms that she should bring in the magistrate. From the Penny Illustrated Paper, the 7th of August, 1875, The Trial of Colonel Baker. The defendant was taken before the magistrate by warrant on June the 19th, and on the 24th he was committed. On that occasion, he said in defence, I am placed in a most difficult position. If by any act of mine on the occasion referred to, I have given any annoyance to Miss Dickinson, I beg to express my most unqualified regret. I solemnly declare upon my honour that was a word misplaced in his mouth, that which she has stated to date has been under the influence of unnecessary fear and exaggerated alarm. Miss Dickinson is brought forward to testify in court, where she recounts in more detail the initial conversations between the two, which ended with her hanging out of a train for 4 to 5 miles to avoid him. The prosecutrix was then called into the box, but some few minutes elapsed before she was able to make her way through the crowd from the entrance set apart for the legal profession. Miss Dickinson is a young lady of prepossessing appearance. She did not betray the slightest emotion on entering the court, but had evidently nerved herself for the very trying and unpleasant ordeal through which she had to pass. Accompanied by her mother, a widowed lady, and her brother, Dr. Dickinson, she stepped into the box, and her modesty of demeanour at once won the sympathy of all present. Her dress was of black silk, trimmed with lace and bugles, and she wore a black hat and feather with lavender gloves, and without the slightest hesitation she gave evidence in support of the charge in a very silvery musical voice. Mr. Poland, having elicited from Miss Dickinson that on Thursday afternoon, June 17th last, she started from the Midhurst station for the Waterloo terminus, and that she travelled alone in a first-class carriage, till the defendant got in at Liphook station, and went on to question her as to the conversation that ensued between them. Miss Dickinson is questioned in vivid detail as to Colonel Baker's actions, and where exactly his hands were, including one that had gone up her dress. Her testimony to an overcrowded courtroom is listened to in utter silence and astonishment. The defence. With so many witnesses, her distress and Colonel Baker's own words to staff at the station of, I don't know what came over me, haunting him, the defence's only ploy is to attempt to use Colonel Baker's superior social class and army reputation as his defence. From the Penny Illustrated Paper, the 7th of August, 1875, Mr. Hawkins' speech for the defence. The gist of Mr. Hawkins' address on behalf of Colonel Baker was contained in his concluding remark. Colonel Baker's lips are closed in this case. I cannot call him into the box to give you an account of the matter. I can but protest on his behalf. Do you suppose a man in his position, whether his passions might have led him to do, would be guilty of an assault committed with so great an extreme violence? It is, in my mind, exceedingly improbable. Here, let me say, I do not for one moment justify his conduct. I do not attempt to do it. I should be wrong to do it. But you must bear in mind that it is not the question you have to decide upon. The defendant is anxious that on this part of the case, you should not confound one thing with another. He desires to bear testimony to the young lady's purity and modesty, and to my mind the idea that he had made up his mind to violate this young lady appears to me incredible. Colonel Baker has endeavoured to make reparation. I know no reparation can be made to the law for the offence of which unquestionably he has been guilty, but such reparation Colonel Baker can make, he makes with the most deeply contrite heart. He expresses his deepest regret that the occurrence should have taken place, and he awaits with terrible anxiety your verdict upon the more serious charge. He awaits it with emotion, and I pray to God that you may be wisely guided in your conclusions, and have only to say that I feel you will do your duty firmly, honestly, and calmly, so that the law may take its course without prejudice or favour. The case closes, leaving it to the jury to decide. The jury find Colonel Baker guilty of indecent assault, although not guilty of criminal assault. From the Penny Illustrated Paper, 7th of August 1875, the sentence. The sentence was then pronounced by Mr. Justice Brett, who paid the following admirable tribute to the behaviour of Miss Dickinson during the terrible ordeal she had undergone. His Lordship, in a loud and clear tone, said, "Prisoner at the bar, when this story was first published, a thrill of dishonour went through the country when it was told that a young and innocent girl travelling by the ordinary conveyance of this country had been obliged to risk her life in order to save herself from a gross outrage. Every part of society, every householder in this kingdom felt as if they had themselves received a personal injury, and when they heard that her assailant was a gentleman, a soldier, and an officer high in command, a thrill of horror, if not disgust, went through them." It may be suggested that the libertine outrage which you committed upon her has defiled her. I say again, distinctly, it has not. She walks and goes from this court as pure, as innocent, as ever undefiled as ever she was. Applause. Nay, more, the courage she has displayed has added a ray of glory to her youth, her innocence, and her beauty. When I say what I have already pointed out, that you were not only of the rank of a gentleman of position, but that you were an officer high in command, it seems to me that, of all the people in the train on that day, you were the last who ought to have been expected to do anything but absolutely to protect a defenceless woman. I say advisedly in the presence of all here that even if a girl so young had behaved herself with imprudence or indiscretion, it was nothing but your duty, the manly duty of a person in your position and of your age, to have protected her even against herself. But there is nothing, from the beginning to the end, in your conduct which can palliate or excuse in the slightest degree that most dishonourable conduct towards the prosecutrix in the crime you committed. Therefore, as I say, I can see no palliation whatever. The sentence which I shall pass upon you will be a severe one, but I hope that it will save you from that absolute destruction which another sentence would impose. The sentence that I pass is that you be imprisoned in the common jail of this country in such a way as shall not subject you to the physical degradations of which I speak for 12 calendar months. You will be fined £500 or be further imprisoned until you pay that fine, and that you pay the costs of the prosecution, and be imprisoned for a further time not exceeding 3 months until you have paid those costs. Postscript. Stories abounded that Queen Victoria had sent a personalised, autographed picture of herself to Miss Dickinson and requested one of her in return. This was refuted by the palace. It was confirmed, however, that the Queen did send a letter to Miss Dickinson's brother expressing her support for Miss Dickinson. This in itself would give Miss Dickinson semi-celebrity status for months after the trial, and indeed, we see her attending a grand event in Paris with minor aristocracy a few months later. As for Colonel Baker, Queen Victoria takes the unprecedented step of removing him from the Queen's army. His life, as he knows it, is destroyed. The case was an international sensation. The American press sent over a reporter who had the privilege of interviewing him in prison, where Colonel Baker admits that he knows his life in England is over. From the Fife Herald on the 30th of September 1875, Colonel Baker interviewed. An American correspondent of the Quebec Morning Chronicle has interviewed Colonel Baker in prison. The correspondent says, "Colonel Baker received me courteously, coming to the door of his room and extending his hand, which I took warmly in mine. 'I'm glad to see you,' he said, smiling, as he threw himself in his robe de chambre on a sofa near the barreled window. 'You are an American, and do you know I have been thinking, when my sentence is over, of visiting your country, perhaps to remain there. I do not deceive myself as to the consequence of my sentence. I know I cannot live in England with any comfort. This wretched affair will pursue me even should I wish to enter any other army. I've understood that the Khedive would give me my position in one of his native regiments, but I want no prominence. A quiet nook on the continent or America are the only two things open to me.' The colonel stopped talking. He spoke like a despairing man. I was surprised at the open manner in which he spoke of his misfortune. I asked him what he thought of his sentence. 'It is a very severe one,' he answered, 'more perhaps in its effect than in itself. I have believed all along that the clamour made about my case would prejudice it in the minds of the common jury. I'm still of that opinion. Had it not been rumoured that the Prince of Wales and others were exerting influences to save me, I believe that more consideration would have been taken of my services, and that simply a fine would have been inflicted. I was made a sacrifice to the cry of one law for the rich and poor alike. I do not accuse my judge, and I foresaw this. It is the reason why I wanted a special jury and court. I shall never cast a word of blame on the lady who has brought it all on me. I am man enough to know, even though I suffer for it, that under all circumstances she could not have done otherwise than she did. I only think it hard that a moment should destroy the honourable record of a whole life. Had Miss Dickinson not been pushed to it, I feel confident she wished to spare me. But with the noises made over it all, she was forced to sacrifice me to her own reputation." That concludes this episode of Frightful Fridays, the attempted ravishing of Miss Dickinson. We very much hope you enjoyed the show. If you did enjoy this show, we would be grateful if you could like or subscribe to our channel. We upload 5 days a week. Mondays are murderous as we delve into the dark side of Regency and Victorian crime. Wednesdays are wicked, where we pull together stories with a similar theme, such as Doctors of Death. Fridays are frightful, where we look at crimes in a location, such as stories from the stage to murder and scandal in the aristocracy. Saturdays is Serial Killer Saturdays, where we investigate serial killer stories from the past. On the last Sunday of the month, we offer a 2-hour compilation of stories based around a theme. If you like this channel, you may be interested in our sister channel, Chronicle of the Times, where we offer a lighter side of Victorian and Edwardian news stories, as well as a weekly podcast of stories from authors of the day, such as Dickens, Collins, Benson, and Conan Doyle. Thank you again for watching and listening. This has been News of the Times, and I am Robin Coles.